man who spends hours in hardware stores sifting through the nuts and bolts of life, Joe Souchere.
Remember last week when the celebrity had a telethon for the victims of Hurricane Harvey?
Yeah, it was a who's who.
It really was, wasn't it?
You work in the phone banks, yeah. Even Barbara Streisand was working the phone
banks.
Well,
it's funny you mentioned her name.
Oh, okay.
She insisted on being photographed only from her good side.
And I might ask, which side is that?
Which side would that be? Yeah. She's 75, and she prefers having her photograph taken from her left side, and it appears her preference even extended to the recent fundraiser in L.A., where she was joined by the likes of Jimmy Fallon, Justin Timberlake, and on and on and on.
Al Pacino.
There were celebrities on the red carpet, but she wanted to walk the carpet in reverse order so the cameras could only shoot her good side, like a salmon swimming upstream. That's Barbara.
Had
to do that.
Yeah, she was there answering phones.
Yeah, she was. Should we visit the destroyed Academy?
I think we can do that.
I think there's a number of items to get to in the destroyed Academy. You know, several NFL owners donated $1 million to Trump's inaugural committee.
Did not know that.
Man, I
was a lot to talk about.
A Republican state senator wants an investigation into a University of Wisconsin-Madison student's video depicting actors wearing anti-police slogans decapitating a pig-like person wearing a police uniform. The video was posted by Anil Pickett, a UW-Madison junior who last year gained attention by marketing a T-shirt that reads, "All white people are racist." Well, that's not true. The video is billed as a commercial for his new line of clothing branded No Justice. The clothing features provocative slogans about racism, sexism, violence, and the police. This vile and racist anti-police video is clearly a direct threat to the brave men and women who serve behind that badge, said a statement from State Senator Steve Nass, a Republican from Whitewater, who sits on the Senate Education Committee. UW-Madison must immediately hold these students accountable, and that should include an investigation by the local police and the Wisconsin Department of Justice. In a brief interview, Pickett said, what do you think he said?
He gets to do a First Amendment rights.
Sure, this is free speech.
He can do what he wants.
This is the same senator that supports free speech, but he only supports free speech when it comes to white supremacy, which is a vile belief for this young man to hold.
Right.
Nass, the legislator, a frequent UW critic, has pushed for a stronger conservative voice on campus, which he claims is stifled by a liberal bias. Do you think? The video posted on a UW-Madison website depicts police officers wearing pig heads, lynching an African-American man with an American flag. Mm. It ends with a machete-wielding man holding a bloodied pig head. The man is wearing a white sweatshirt with the words, "F the police. They the biggest gang in America," which is spelled with three Ks. The video has since been removed, but it can be seen on NASA's website. The university released a statement that says, UW-Madison strives to provide a welcoming and inclusive campus environment while allowing everyone to share ideas and political views in exercise of their free speech rights. However, the university strongly condemns the glorification of violence, such as that contained in a promotion of student-produced clothing line. Well, so the school has it both ways there. They're just enjoying having it both ways. We support the right of this young fellow to have his views. We don't like the violent nature of it, but he has every right in the world to express those views. Let's go now to the University of Pittsburgh.
All right, we're going to go east, Joe.
That's right.
Yep.
University of Pittsburgh students are demanding that the school make several changes. We demand that you take action by addressing these demands by the 2018-2019 school year. University of Pittsburgh students from the Fossil Free Pit Coalition and United Students Against Sweatshops banded together last week for a rally for transparency, which involved a protest with a list of 15 demands for University Chancellor Patrick Gallagher. Number one.
What's their first demand?
That all student workers be paid a minimum living wage of $15 an hour.
Ah, good old college wage.
All right. Number two, that the university freezes tuition hikes and advocates for federal cancellation of student debt and free tuition.
All right, we want free college.
Well, who's going to pay for it?
Somebody has to pay.
Number three, that the university vocally endorses a grad student union. Number four, that the university immediately stops spending money, time, and resources on union-busting tactics and creating intimidating environments that prevent workers from having a free choice. Number five, that the university divest its financial holdings in fossil fuels.
Oh, so they don't want to make money.
You think a lot of those protesters might have a car?
I would imagine.
Number six, that the university takes a firm stance against private prisons. Any investments or connections between private prison corporations and the University of Pittsburgh should be made transparent and terminated. I don't know what that means. Mm. Number seven, that the university declares itself a sanctuary campus.
What does that mean?
Well, I guess if you were in the country without a permit, you'd be safe there.
All are welcome here.
Number eight, that gender-neutral bathrooms are accessible in every campus building.
Huh.
Number nine, that the university promises a real commitment to diversifying the student body in class, race, gender, and sexuality, investing in cultural organizations rather than merely advertising itself as a diverse institution.
They're saying put your money where your mouth is.
Number 10, that the university prioritizes and provides affordable housing for all students.
Oh, wait. So we want free tuition
and
free housing.
Well, affordable housing, yeah.
Well, almost free housing.
Number 11, that the university sustainably invest in the interest of the Pittsburgh community rather than its own interest or those of the Board of Trustees. Number 12, that all campus cops are disarmed and that city cops are banned from campus.
Yeah, you can't come on here. Unless I'm being robbed.
Unless I'm being raped, then I would like to see you.
Right.
Number 13, that the university commits to increased transparency in its investments and that students, faculty, staff, and alumni know exactly where Pitt's money is going. Number 14, that the university commits to switching to renewable energy.
Hmm.
And 15, that Chancellor Gallagher takes a 10% pay cut to hike employee pay. Mm-hmm. Chancellor Gallagher, in the political climate we're forced to inhabit, our university cannot stay silent on issues that affect our community. To do so would be to stand in opposition to those of us in the Pittsburgh community who are vulnerable to classism, racism, gender-based violence. Okay. You know, that
I
isn't...
I think they want it all.
You know, students have been making demands for years. Yeah. I'm reminded of... I went through a period... at St. Thomas.
Okay. This is the late, early 70s.
Mm-hmm. Where I got this bee in my bonnet about what was the Catholic Church, most principally in Rome, why did they have an invaluable art collection, for example?
Okay.
I don't know. I probably was being young and liberal.
Sure.
And I thought they can't, you know, preach to me about saving the wretched of the world while they have these magnificent paintings. And why won't they sell those and give the money to people?
Right.
That was my, I got over that.
I wonder what your awakening was.
I really wasn't a member of a big group, you know. It's not like the TV cameras were there.
The hell in Rome?
What? We must do something about
storm
this.
Storm the castle.
Oh, I think it came up. I think it came up with, it would come up in journalism class. I had a great friendship with the journalism professor, Father Whalen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was terribly amused at my naivete.
Okay.
You know, back then, a protest at St. Thomas consisted of maybe three lit candles and some Neil Young songs. It really wasn't...
It wasn't well done like today's protests.
We didn't have a list of demands.
Ah, okay.
But I was, you know, damn near demanding that the Vatican divest of its art collection.
Sell some of those Michelangelo.
I don't even know how I knew they had an art collection. I don't know why it came up.
Well, I think they've always had money, haven't they?
I think so.
I mean, because every time you go to the church, they're hitting you up with the...
Well, that doesn't get sent to the Vatican. No, that pays for the furnace in the church, and you know.
Don't they get a little piece of the action? Isn't it like they're the Godfather? They take.
What do you think? They're franchises like McDonald's?
We got 10% off. Nativity. You didn't send your 10% this week.
I don't think he's sending any money.
He's sending out Moose and Rocco.
They're not sending any money out there.
Well, that's quite a collection that they have.
Reeves, bruh. I think Rook was gone. Who was the? Who was the Italian that reminded us of Guido Sarducci?
Oh, God, who was it?
He was predicting the end of the world, right?
Was that who it was? Hold on. I just looked the story
up. It's going to end soon.
But the guy was...
He came out today, right? And didn't he say, oh, you know...
See, no, listen. Here, I'll tell you this when we come back. Okay. Just a minute. Yeah.
And now, a man who has never had a relationship with a tree, Joe Souchere.
Are you guys worried Saturday?
Worried about what?
Well, that's the day the world was supposed to end.
I didn't even put a thought to it, because I forgot. When did I do Saturday?
Christian conspiracy theorist David Mead's prediction that the world as we know it would come to an end Saturday was incorrect. He missed it. He was off.
I'm happy about that.
Yeah, his timing was off. This is from the New York Daily News. I realize reporting isn't what it used to be, but why is this crackpot even being given any ink?
Right. If I say it, why would somebody believe me or give me the publicity?
Consequently, Mead, whose qualifications include writing books and writing things on a website, now states that October 15th is doomsday.
Ah.
Yeah, not the 23rd of September.
Oh, okay.
So he missed it. It's the 15th.
Got it.
The actual event of the beginning of the tribulation occurs on October 15, he said. That's when the action starts. Hold on and watch. Wait until the middle of October, and I don't believe you'll be disappointed. No, I'll be terribly disappointed. I don't want it to end.
Right.
I don't want you to be correct.
I've got things to do. I need to live my life.
Mm-hmm. The man who believes there exists an ongoing plot to overthrow President Trump, who is brilliant and he knows everything, previously connected the August 21 solar eclipse to the end of the world, citing the biblical significance of the number 33 and how September 23 was 33 days after the celestial event.
Mm.
The world is not ending, but the world as we know it is ending, he told the Washington Post earlier this month.
That's how he gets out of it, huh?
Why would the Washington Post oblige this crackpot? A major part of the world will not be the same in October. Specifically, Mead said the Book of Revelation's prophecies would begin to appear Saturday, heralding catastrophes that would unfold over the coming weeks. So unless the Bible foretold of LeBron James taking to Twitter to publicly dunk on Trump, it would seem he was a bit off.
For some, that is the end of the world.
Mm-hmm. I'll try not to bring him up again, but you know darn well, on October 16th or 17th, the papers will run back to this knucklehead, and then he'll give them another date.
Yeah, but I don't think you should ignore him. I would like to know just in case, so I can use that as, you know, dear, you might as well have a glass of wine tonight because tomorrow could be the end.
Well, I looked at that hole in the ground out in Arizona, and I thought,
I'm still a little perplexed by that.
What are you perplexed by?
Okay, I'm not doing a bit. I'm not trying to be funny. I'm not joking.
I know.
I'm on the beach. I'm on Marcos Island.
Mm-hmm. You've been to Marcos?
Been to Marcos. And I have a ball of zinc.
Yep.
A zinc ball, perfectly round sphere.
Yeah.
I drop it in the sand on Marco.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
It's there. It's a big round ball outside, you know, sitting in the sand.
All right.
What you presented to me with that crater is an empty hole. It's as if somebody took the zinc ball out of the earth.
All right, I'm going to have a go at trying to explain this to you.
That's what, for some reason, I'm having trouble with today.
I know, you're struggling. You're struggling. Well, first of all, this was 50,000 years ago. So you can imagine that in 50,000 years, the hole got picked pretty clean, especially when it was first discovered, which might have been only, I don't know. Arizona only became a state in 1912.
Okay.
This is out in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
I don't know how, I'm going to provide that information for you tomorrow, but I don't know how long from when it happened 50,000 years ago, I don't know how long before it was discovered. You with me so far?
So
the meteors are metal. They're metal. M-E-T-A-L. They're chunks of metal. And when it hit, it not only created the hole in the ground, it destroyed itself.
That's what I don't get. They're solid.
No, but it's traveling at, damn near light year speed, it's going to disintegrate upon collision with the Earth. The biggest piece of meteor that's preserved is, you know, maybe the size of 3 footballs. So a couple of things. A lot of it burned up upon entry. What was left to create such
a... Don't give me a witness report like, oh, well, it'll burn
well, up. A lot of it shattered, and once archaeologists and geologists discovered it, I'm sure they each tried to get as much of it as possible to go back to their various universities or whatever, and then somebody got the idea, we can make a few bucks setting up, I think it's on an Indian reservation, I hope the Indians are getting the money.
I hope so, too.
We can set up a visitor center here and make ourselves a few bucks. And to charge people to come and look at this. And then you get these historic displays in there and murals.
Okay, but
a
smooth sphere-like.
They're a jagged piece
of
rock.
No, but I'm saying what's there right now, from seeing your picture.
Yeah.
From seeing what is there.
Yeah.
It is smooth and round. It's just that half.
It's a big hole in the ground.
That's what I don't understand.
Well, then what you're not understanding or what you're failing to understand is the power of that impact. Don't you get that?
I understand that it's going to be flying in there, but I also think because of its size, it would still be flat, or there would be a small hill there, a mountain there. I don't expect it to be perfectly round. But I'm puzzled as to why so much soil has been vacated. That's what I can't get.
And thank God, 50,000 years ago, it just missed that highway.
It was closer than hell.
Just missed the highway.
I can't imagine the people that were driving on that
highway.
Can you imagine
at that time standing next to that woman?
You know what I'm going to do?
Thank God it missed the highway.
You know what I'm going to do?
And I'm not trying to be silly. It's a logistics question.
All right, I'm going to make a note to myself.
Here we go.
To do my homework on this. I suppose any one of you two knuckleheads could have done it already.
I wish you'd get
on it. Just Google meteor crater, Reeves.
Okay.
Google meteor crater, Arizona, and try to answer dummy's question.
Yeah.
Do
crater have legs?
Yeah. In real life.
Do Lieutenant Dan have legs?
Why don't we take a break now and...
Okay.
Take it easy, champ. Why don't you stop talking for a while?
Maybe sit the next couple plays out. You know what I mean?
Took you long enough to get to this, didn't it?
Yeah, I was worried about the crater.
Yeah. Well, I got it for you. You're going to learn it whether you want to or not now.
This sounds like a cool line.
Take it easy.
All right, go out west.
Well, I'm standing on a corner in Winslow, Arizona. It's such a fine sight to see. It's a girl, my lord, in a flatbed Ford, slowing down to take a look at me.
Well, even got the flatbed Ford.
Yes.
Here's John Hite in the newsroom.
Thank you, Joe. Cloudy and 63 degrees. Twins with their last day off of the regular season today. They lead the race for the last wild card spot in the American League by 4.5 games over the Angels. Twins have 6 games left, and that kicks off tomorrow night in Cleveland. They'll play 3 games against the Indians there. Then they come back home to finish off the season at Target Field with 3 against the Tigers. One other baseball note, Aaron Judge today has set the rookie record for home runs. He hit 2 home runs today. That game is still going on. Mark McGwire held the old record at 49. Judge today hit his 49th and his 50th up to this point anyway.
There should be an asterisk by that, though.
Why is that?
Because that ballpark is a joke. Yankee Stadium. She gave me credit for about 3/4 of those home runs.
Mike Zimmer talking to reporters this hour. He said he really likes the way his offense played yesterday. He also said his offensive coaching staff's doing a great job. Vikings now 2-1. They'll play the Lions next Sunday at U.S. Bank Stadium. One other Vikings note, quarterback Teddy Bridgewater will be eligible to come off the physically unable to perform list in 3 weeks, and Pro Football Talk is reporting that Teddy will be ready to return as soon as the rules allow. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio wrote, one source with knowledge of the situation says Bridgewater will be ready to go, but that the Vikings likely would proceed with caution.
I forgot about that guy.
Frequent emailer Terry wants to know, how do meteors always land in craters?
Good question. Very good aim.
And Michelle wants to know, Rook, did you change your grade to a D+ in science?
I think I failed.
I'm going to straighten this out for you after the news.
News notes from today, Governor Mark Dayton said he disagrees with professional athletes who sit or kneel during the national anthem. At least 200 NFL players knelt, sat, stretched, or prayed during the anthem yesterday after President Trump's weekend criticism of athletes who don't stand for the pregame ritual. Vikings players and management stood with locked arms before their game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Dayton today called that the appropriate response. The Democratic governor said multimillion-dollar athletes should focus their energy on fighting the cause of their protests rather than kneeling during the anthem, but he said players do have the constitutional right to do that.
John.
Mr. Reavers.
Several people are calling and emailing because Joe said it again, and I know it's factual, but just explain the reason why. We all know that it's Glenn Frey and the Eagles.
Glenn Frey singing it. Glenn Frey co-wrote it, but Jackson Brown.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, gets the writing credit.
Well, because Joe mentioned
well,
in the
Glenn
first hour.
Too. Both of them have.
Okay. And a lot of people have said, no, it's the Eagles. Well, yes.
We know that.
We're aware of that.
Thanks, guys. Yep, we got her. Appreciate it.
Jackson Brown wrote it. Co-wrote it.
Yes. Senator Rand.
I mean, people get really upset about all that stuff.
Fact-based. Yeah. We are fact-based.
Yeah, I understand. Well, yeah, we knew it was the Eagles.
So. Man, I've had a rough night.
Man, come on. I had a rough night, and I hate the f***ing Eagles, man.
Senator Rand Paul remaining opposed today to the Republican health care bill that would repeal the Obama health care law. Despite fresh revisions, angry, yelling demonstrators forced the Republican-led Senate Finance Committee to briefly delay the chamber's first and only hearing on the controversial issue. Police carried some protesters out of the hearing room today and rolled others out in wheelchairs as scores chanted, "No cuts to Medicaid, save our liberty." If you want a hearing, you better shut up, panel chairman Orrin Hatch said as the noise erupted. Top Republicans had amended their measure overnight, adding billions of extra dollars for states and easing coverage requirements under President Obama's statute to win over wavering GOP senators. Paul had opposed the earlier version of the bill, saying it spent too much money. Asked today if Paul's position had changed, his spokesman Sergio Gore provided a document listing three demands. Said the primary one was a significant reduction in $1 trillion in spending under Obama's 2010 overhaul. Violent crime in the U.S. increased last year, marking the second increase in as many years. However, property crime was down, marking the 14th straight decrease in that. That, according to stats released by the FBI today, all based on compilation of information reported by more than 16,000 law enforcement agencies nationwide. According to a release, overall violent crime jumped by 4.1% nationwide. That would include murder, rape, robbery, human trafficking, and aggravated assault. That included an estimated 17,250 murders, an 8.6% increase from the year 2015. In the wake of Hurricane Maria, Puerto Rico's 3.4 million citizens remain almost entirely without electrical power. And it's not because the power plants are having problems. The problem is about 80% of all transmission lines, which take power from the plants to distribution centers, are down.
Where is this, John?
In Puerto Rico.
Oh, it's just terrible.
Yeah. Nearly all the local power lines that run to residences and businesses have also been destroyed. The damage is so severe that simply repairing the electrical grid may not be an option. Ken Buell is the director of emergency response and recovery with the U.S. Department of Energy. He said, we really should think in terms of rebuilding at this point. Paying for that would be a challenge, however. Puerto Rico Electric Power Authority, or PREPA, is bankrupt already with at least $9 billion in debt. Wow. Right now, power in Puerto Rico is coming from generators. Not clear how long the island will be relying on them. PREPA has conducted what they call a good portion of their damage assessment, which is the first step in power restoration.
Well, and even if they wanted to, I mean, in some cases, they can't even get around. I mean, roads are disintegrating because of the infrastructure.
Exactly. Yeah, I saw a picture of a highway.
It was basically just
wasn't much of a highway.
No, it really wasn't. A Minneapolis woman is dead, her husband under arrest after an incident this morning. Minneapolis police say officers responding to a 911 call on the 1000 block of 61st Street West around 8:45. Once inside the home, the press release said officers located an adult female who was pronounced dead at the scene. Husband arrested, has been booked into the Hennepin County Jail. Police say they are not looking for any other suspects in connection with this matter and are investigating the case as a domestic-related homicide. The Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Office will be the agency releasing the woman's identity as well as the exact cause of death. An Egyptian woman, once believed to be the world's heaviest, has died in the United Arab Emirates. Imad Ahmed Abdul El Atte had traveled to India earlier this year for a bariatric weight loss surgery.
She was a big girl.
She was a rather large gal.
Local media said she lost more than 660 pounds.
Wow.
But had died from complications from other health issues. A hospital statement said the 37-year-old had heart disease and kidney dysfunction. Ms. Abdul El Atte had been in the UAE capital, Abu Dhabi, since May after being transferred following specialist surgery in Mumbai, India. Before the surgery, her family said she had not left her house for 25 years. After an online campaign by her sister, she was able to travel to Mumbai on a chartered plane to get help from an Indian surgeon.
So what is the final?
She's dead.
She's
dead.
She's gone. Okay.
She's dead. Oh, that's too bad. Then President Barack Obama warned Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg about the impact of fake news on the 2016 U.S. presidential election, according to the Washington Post. The two met in private on November 19th at a World Leaders Forum in Lima, Peru, according to people briefed on the exchange. The president told Zuckerberg that if Facebook did not do more to address the threat, the problem would only continue to get worse in elections to come. Zuckerberg, in turn, assured the president that he was aware of the problem, but that such messages were not widespread on Facebook and there was no easy solution. Since then, of course, Facebook has increasingly put in place solutions to counter fake news, which seems to have had some effect, apparently. The fake news that plagued the 2016 U.S. election and the 2017 U.K. election did not seem to play a significant role in Sunday's German election, according to Facebook. And when high school sweethearts Heather and Cole decided to tie the knot, they thought there was no better place to be married than the beach. They had a picture-perfect wedding in Laguna Beach, where they and their guests placed their cameras and purses on a nearby seawall after the ceremony.
Oh.
But it all came grinding to a halt as a wave came crashing down, taking with it all the items.
Sorry,
another example of humans losing their relationship with nature. Let's just put it on the seawall. What can happen?
Nobody's going to steal them.
This ended good, though. Okay. Because they lost all their pictures, the camera.
Oh.
2 months later, Alex Noble and girlfriend Maria were strolling down the same beach when Alex stepped on something. He said, I realized at that point it was a camera.
And he's now suing them for cutting his foot on the beach.
Yeah. You know, they put the photos on Facebook, and believe it or not, a friend of a friend recognized the bride from the wedding.
Here we go.
They were stunned, and they now have their
pictures. So if they drop the camera in the sand, would it create a crater?
Yeah,
and
that's
would
a good
be
point.
I'm going to straighten all this out for you after the weather.
Yeah. I got it.
You'll learn more here by accident than elsewhere by design. Here's Joe Souchere.
Here's Dave Dahl.
Thank you, Joe. We're up to 63 degrees, creeping our way up to about 65. That'll probably be as much as we can get. Still some scattered showers around to our east and northeast. Some thunder, actually, in the southeastern corner of Minnesota. Mostly just showers moving in again later tonight, probably after the dinner hour, before that arrives. So we got a little bit of a break here. And then a little bit of fog mixed in with that rain shower activity through morning tomorrow. Tomorrow's high only 64, northwest winds at around 5 to 10. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, cool down to 48. Wednesday, partly cloudy, still cool, 64 for the high. Thursday, it warms up to 69, getting close to that 70-degree mark. An isolated shower is possible, especially late in the day on Thursday. Friday, cool again, 60. 65 on Saturday, 68 on Sunday. Some late-day showers Sunday into Sunday night. And then Monday of next week. Next week, it does look like it warms up a little bit, upper 60s to low 70s for the beginning of next week. But until that time, it's going to be cool. Tonight's low down to 58. Right now, we're at 63. And I have the records for the day, Joe.
September 25.
91 on this date.
91.
In 1920.
In 1920.
31.
31.
1926.
In 1926. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Take that orchestra down.
Yes, sir.
Tina wants to know, can I get a ray of hope for this picture? She sent a picture of her son getting sworn into the Minnesota National Guard last Wednesday. Our 17-year-old son, Tyler, was sworn into the Minnesota National Guard. He will graduate from high school in Wabasha in May and go to Missouri at the end of June for basic training. He has talked about joining the military for a few years. As his mother, it was my duty to question why he wanted to join. His response was always, I just feel it's something I need to do. My husband and I are beyond proud of him. I just wanted to let you know there's still hope. I am the one who emailed a few months back to inquire about the bumper music. I want to thank you for all making more of an effort to name the song and artist. Boy, you let me down on that one, didn't you, guys?
No, we did not.
I have downloaded a few songs since then. I have to say Midnight in Harlem is one of my favorites. After a long day in a small office full of women, it's very soothing to put my headphones on and listen to that song while I go for a nice walk. Thanks for the show. Keep up the good work and good luck. Sincerely, Tina. All right. She gets the ray of hope.
Here's today's ray of hope.
And Brian Wilson, I Can Hear Music.
No, it's the Beach Boys. And that's Carl singing. All right, you ready?
Yeah, yeah.
You ready?
Yep.
The world's best preserved meteorite impact site on Earth is located just minutes from Interstate 40 and the old Route 66 near Winslow, Arizona. Meteor Crater is the breathtaking result of a collision between an asteroid traveling 26,000 miles per hour and hitting Earth 50,000 years ago. It's nearly 1 mile across, 2.4 miles in circumference, and more than 550 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I got you. I'm with you so far. That's pretty quick, though. 26,000 miles per hour.
The Meteor Crater Interactive Discovery Center contains many exciting interactive displays and exhibits, making it the most extensive and informative museum of its type on Earth. Visitors will relive the intensity of the impact 50,000 years ago from a fiery giant meteor mass weighing several hundred thousand tons hurtled through space and impacted the Earth. Okay.
So basically it just went whatever it wanted to in space.
Stay tuned. It was the equivalent of how much dynamite? Because that's your problem. See, I don't have that. Damn it! What happened?
See, that's yeah. I guess
here's the
explosion
deal.
Is what I'm having trouble.
Multiple tens of thousands of tons of dynamite is would have been the resulting explosion. All right, what happens when dynamite explodes?
It vacates.
It disintegrates.
It disintegrates. Yeah. Right.
So that should help you understand why there's nothing there. It all disintegrated. It disintegrated. You can't be struggling with that. Let's say you this steel ball you have and you're sitting on the beach.
Yep.
And you drop it in the sand. You agree that it displaces the sand and makes an indentation in the sand.
Oh, yes.
But your point is you can still reach down and pick up the steel ball and take it back home.
Right. Which is what it looks like the crate was done with the crater.
Right. But you have not dropped that steel ball with any force. You've just merely let it fall out of your hand. This is going 26,000 miles an hour and packing a load of God knows how many hundreds of thousands of tons of dynamite. So when it hits, what happens to a firecracker when you light it, when it goes off? It disintegrates.
Disintegrates.
Well, that's what happened.
Okay, but it's a big rock. That's where likening it to a stick of dynamite or a bunch of dynamite, I guess that's, I picture a big fiery ball hitting Earth and jolting it, but not exploding. And I can't in my mind's eye picture it. But that would be the answer. That would be the answer. It disintegrates and it's burned everything.
Here. The spectacular result of the collision that rocked the American Southwest with the energy of more than, you ready?
Yeah.
20 million tons of TNT.
Okay.
Well, nothing is going to survive 20 million tons of TNT going off. Nothing will survive. I told you, the biggest piece they preserved is not much bigger than a couple of footballs. And it's just jagged iron. It's iron. And so a few pieces survived and didn't melt. And That should help you. You're making me very worried that you don't get this.
I get it. I just, in my mind's eye, I can't picture it.
How about this part, Joe? Mm-hmm. And if you mentioned this when you were first talking about it, forgive me because I was handling several phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
On August 8th, 1964, mm-hmm. a pair of commercial pilots of a Cessna 150 mm-hmm. flew low over the crater. Mm-hmm. After crossing the rim, they could not maintain level flight. The pilot attempted to circle into the crater and climb over the rim. During the attempted climb out, the aircraft stalled, crashed, and caught fire. It is commonly reported that the plane ran out of fuel, but this is incorrect. Both occupants were severely injured but survived their ordeal. A small portion of the wreckage not removed from the crash site remains visible. Well, why was there a...
So what is the implication? That
that's what I'm wondering. That's all it's given on the Wikipedia page, and I'm wondering if that's part of the museum that you toured.
I did not see that, but that strikes me as that maybe the iron had some magnetic.
That's what I'm wondering.
Capacity to interfere with the plane.
And this is back in 1964, so mm-hmm. obviously our technology is a bit different.
Did anything, and you're briefly looking it up, tell us when was this discovered? There weren't people in Arizona 50,000 years ago.
Right.
Earliest discovery that I can see on this.
And boom goes the dynamite.
November of 1891.
That's plausible. You would think it might have been known by natives before then.
Chief geologist for the U.S. Geological Survey investigated the crater back in November of 1891.
And then again, somebody got the great idea that, you know what? We got us a tourist gold mine right here.
Yeah.
We got us a tourist gold mine. Let's take a break and you check to see if those callers can be of use to us.
All right, we can do that. Roger.
Josh?
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
Hey, I was just going to say that Rookie's thinking of it in the wrong way. He's thinking of it as a steel ball. He should think of it as a cannonball.
All right. Thank you.
All right, thank
you. Got it.
Jason?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead, please.
I think I have a better example. Throw a snowball at a snowman at about 150 miles an hour and see what happens.
Right.
It's going to leave a divot, and you're never going to find the snowball.
That's right. Thank you. Is it becoming clearer to you, Rook?
Yes.
Grant?
Hey.
Yes?
I'm going to come down on Rookie's side on this. You talked about disintegrate. Disintegrate doesn't mean it's gone. It means it's in a whole lot of small pieces.
Right.
And I think that might account for the problems that the aircraft encountered as well. All that stuff might still be there, but it's spread out over a microscopic size over a large portion of the landscape.
All right, thank you. I'm out of time, but yes, thank you.
Yeah, you helped me. 1500. Let's just leave it at that. Huh?
ESPN okay. is KSTP St. Paul, Minneapolis. Sports is coming up.